You don't want to practice sitting up here with us?
Huh?
You don't want to practice sitting up here with us?
Your
boy. And your brother?
Hi, Dana. How are you?
Is he still in El Paso? Or?
Yeah. Have a good weekend, Mark.
This is pretty funny.
It is.
Is that a good
thing? No. Where's
okay.
The rest of it?
Are we ready?
It's because this is only a partial grab, right?
Yeah.
The warrant list, it's only a partial grab? Because it's usually, I mean.
My thing is laptop pages on here.
Oh, it's there.
Are we ready? Okay, I call this special finance audit facility planning committee meeting to order. The time is 6:15. If you could please call roll.
Armando Rodriguez.
Present.
Ms. Patricia Mendoza.
Here.
Mrs. Rachel Quintana.
And Ms. Quintana did call in. She was not going to be able to make it today.
Start off with first agenda. 2A, review of July 1st through 31st, 2011 warrant list.
And I'll start off with Ms. Mendoza.
Okay. Ready, Martha? Ready. Page 5. For Azar Security Services. Financial Services, Campuses, Food Services Department. This is in addition to the security we have.
No, Azar Security Services is the the security that picks up the daily deposit for the bank.
That was way too good. It's like a test, Martha. I've got a number here for Steve jumping balloons, but you don't want. I have a question. And all of the people from Ernie College High School receive mileage. The staff. I've noticed that several places throughout they all receive mileage for development of summer institute.
It might be, and can you specify one page?
Yes, ma'am. Page 30.
30?
Uh-huh. Kenneth Holtzman?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I saw this not just with this individual, but with other employees, and I wonder.
What happens is that I know that UTEP provides some services through a grant that they have, and part of the grant allowable expenses is mileage to travel to and from. I'm not sure if this particular, you know, this situation across the board, but the ones you've noticed are related to a grant, or it is that just they're submitting for mileage requests.
And I can't remember even now if they're, I don't know if they're all the same amount, but I did notice that throughout the warrant list, several members of that campus get
mileage. I will review them and then provide a response for you. Like I said, I'm not sure if this is all related to a grant, but in the past we have paid for expenses that then were reimbursed by the granting agency. And it looks like it's a 483 account, so I want to say that it is a grant.
Mm-hmm.
But I will share.
On page 72, and I know we do this pretty on a rotating basis for Watson Pest Management. That's an item block for RFPs, right? Have we done that this year?
No, we have not gone out.
Do we go out every 2 years? Or?
I believe so. We don't handle it. Purchasing does.
Okay.
But we'll look into it.
Okay.
I will provide a response.
Okay.
That.
believe that's it.
That's it.
It was easy. It was easy on you.
Ms. Charles?
I have way more. I had to sit in the laundromat and look at this.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Just, if I might real quick, Ms. Charles, we have, is this what we're looking at, possibly the next warrant list?
The first section is what you'll be seeing. What happened is that because when we did the conversion, we kept the purchase orders that were from prior year, June 30th being the end of our fiscal year. Any purchase order that was encumbered and we received an invoice for it in July, we still processed through AS400 so that we wouldn't transfer all the POs into the new year. And so then new POs were created under the new team system after July 1st. And if we received invoicing for those, then we processed those through the teams. So the month of July, we worked out of two systems. Next coming month, we won't have that. And so then that first section, this is what those reports look like. A couple of weeks
will look like. I mean, in the future,
will look like this, yes.
And Martha, that's really going to be my first question. I didn't notice a rhyme or reason to how these were put in.
They were they're sorted by account number.
Okay, and but not alphabetically.
Not by vendor number. If you wish to for us to change the way it's, we can resort it.
Yes, I would like if it were resorted, because this, it seemed to contain obviously all the same information, and it was, you know, it wasn't bad to read. It was a little small. It could be a little larger, if it helped. And with the AS400, it's, I'm going to guess alphabetically.
By vendor, yes.
By vendor, which makes it
kind of
easier.
Summarizes the activity by vendor.
Yeah, instead of a shotgun blast. So,
okay.
If that's okay with.
Is that available?
You're looking at. Can you
see the new one?
That you wanted in what type of order?
Alphabetically organized by the vendor, like we do in the old days.
You wouldn't want it through the time, the date.
No.
Because then you'll have vendors like
Yeah, then you'll have the vendors everywhere. Yeah. You'll just have the date. So I would say the
alphabetically through vendor.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Is that okay?
That's fine with me. Is that fine with
on the font size, I don't know if something will be lost. A column, we'll have to play around and see what we can do there.
Sorry, I'm old. It'll happen to the rest of you. Okay, I've got page three. At the top of the page, there's shipping and handling charge to Amsterdam Printing at $112.
Okay, page two of
page three.
AS400?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. At the very top of the page, Martha, actually the total is $348.18.
Okay.
That just seemed like a lot of money for shipping.
I will probably have to look into that.
Next one is page 8. It's about halfway down the page. It's $146.63. It is to assist Chinese language learners. How many do we have? That's a good one.
No shipping.
No shipping. page 12, Desert Communications. We've got two HP Pro notebook PCs. One seems to be $1,594, the other $797. I just wondered, is one better than the other? Somebody get a little better something? Looks like Ms. Brigham has the answer.
I'm already there, Ms. Sills.
Okay, thank you.
It's actually the same PO and, or it's a related PO, and let's see. One is the 1594 is the pro book, and, oh, then the other one is, the, is it 138047?
Yes.
Is the 797?
Yes.
Okay, so that's a high standard.
Is one of them an HP?
HP?
Okay.
No, they're both HP. Oh.
Okay, I know it might be that the one of them is one that we purchased, that we put in, and I can tell you that that one is a little bit,
oh,
it's
yeah.
probably the big one because
yes.
it's supposed to handle AutoCAD.
No,
the other ones don't need the AutoCAD,
okay.
the memory and the
no,
upgrade
not
and the
no.
graphics. Because when we start,
it's not
mine? Okay, I know that when it appears, I don't even remember how much I paid.
It's okay. I just wondered what this, you know, what the difference.
Well, 1594, that is the price.
Students.
Yeah.
And it is, it's for students and it's wonderful. I just.
The one for $797 was purchased from student support, and then the one for $1,500 was purchased from the high school. And it might be that. Without actually calling and finding out, it just might be that the one the high school selected was with more bells and whistles.
Okay.
For
is it read the same? I mean, down to the 6455B notebook, everything read the same.
Right. What I'll check though is on the 1594. I would bet money that is abundant.
Okay.
But we'll check, Ms. Farrells, because I think that is that 1594 because it's a round off number, and I bet you money that is the bundle that we get for, and see it's the tutorial, and it's the social study, it's a science package, but we'll get you that information.
Page 33, to Line Barker, Gauguin, Flair, and Samson. Martha, will this be the study we'll see on Tuesday night, our property
yes.
value study? And will we have the copy of that in the Friday package?
It's my understanding that he's provided, the representative from Line Barker has provided all the information.
Okay. So that we could look at it ahead of time. Finance implementation training for Prologic.
Mm-hmm.
Do we use that in addition to Teams?
Prologic is a company that's created Teams.
Okay, so they're like the parent company.
They're the.
Okay, so this is what, this is to help us learn how to use the Teams. We had 90 students from Northwest. Used to be Natchez. Looked like we took them to Sol Ross. Was it a field trip?
Yes, it was. It was a day that they didn't have classes, and I can't remember if there weren't any community college classes, but they, you know, we had a school day. And so what they did is they took, I believe it was the upcoming seniors
right.
to Sol Ross for a field trip to see the university
yes.
and experience.
Yes.
And did they spend the night or
no.
just they had to come back?
It was a one day.
Long term.
Well, Line Barker report is in your packet.
Great.
And the packets will be ready in about 20 minutes.
Page 60. And I see board approval, but I just have to tell you, I do not remember $137,336.66. That seems like an awful lot of money.
I would have to...
Or teacher-created materials.
I would have to verify with...
Yeah, and Martha, or she's right out there. Pam is right outside the door. Teacher-created materials is the worst-named company in the state of Texas. It's actually, it sounds like it's just a bunch of teachers who came to our boardroom and wrote materials.
Yes.
It's not. It's a company, teacher-created materials. And the gentleman from the company came and presented in front of the board. He came with Pam. And it was specific science intervention materials.
I remember the
That's
name.
Right. That's what I that did. Was.
Was it bilingual?
Yes. I think some of it was and some of it wasn't.
That's correct.
Right.
I remember the man. Okay, so you think that's
what that is? I know that's what it is. Pam's coming in just a second if you want to ask her any questions about it. But the gentleman was here.
I remember now. Okay, that's good enough because okay. I remember we were all
asking.
Yeah, we asked him questions. We heard that. I know.
Oh, there she is.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Pam.
Pam, can you quickly, and just in 30 seconds, teacher-created materials.
Yes.
What is it? What's it going to do?
I don't know if you recall, but it was that those science materials that were going to were given out to the campuses that really stressed a lot of the reading for the expository reading in the area of science. It was for all five campuses.
Elementary.
All five elementary campuses. And
training for teachers.
Yes, that's coming in. The company recommends, I don't know if you remember, but it was the couple campuses of CES that piloted it. And then we met with the administrators, and they all were on board. They wanted to get it. And then the curriculum writers used it this summer to include it with the curriculum, and they were very excited about it. And the company recommends that they get their feet wet with it for about 6 weeks so they know the right questions to ask and the training will be more relevant. So in about 6 weeks into the year, we'll provide the staff development. It was about
137,000.
Okay. But that's for five campuses, for all five, for all six, for K-5. So it's...
And you will keep us posted, you know, was it...
Absolutely.
A good investment because it is a large investment.
And so far, they're pretty. The curriculum writers were very excited about it also because they're just needing those resources, especially with the new science teams and the start coming along with the expository reading and writing on the test.
And where did that money come from? What was it, title or what was it?
Title One funds.
Title One funds are.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The last question is just for my information. It sounds like we're on page 71, our forensic science classes.
Yes.
They sound wonderful. Is it held at the high school?
Yes.
And is it Kate?
Yes.
All right.
Good.
Very good. Thank you. And are the children just lining up to get into this class?
Yes.
I would think so.
Well, we have four classes, and she has... matter of fact, all the cake classes are booked.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Ms. Green. That's all I want to do. Thank you.
Ms. Cassidy?
Yes, I have one on Desert Communications as well. It's page 12. It says SAN support renewal. It's in the amount of $6,456. Is that the SAN that we purchased not too long ago? They're going to renew it constantly or every year, or how is that working?
Wore out and blew up.
That was one of the first ones. That was for me right
506. Remember when we had to put that in and get it? So, yes.
Okay. So what they did was they fixed it and it's up and running again?
Yes.
Okay. That's all the questions I have for
you. Can I ask a somewhat on topic, but a little different? Speaking of blowing up technology equipment, can you brief the board very quickly about the voicemail server, which is similar?
Is it on the water list?
Well,
no.
It's the same type of situation. It blew up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes,
that's
fine.
So, you're right.
Okay. Thank you.
It's weighing on my mind, I guess. That's
if we could just get something in Friday packet, that would.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm done. I just had that.
Yes,
Mrs. Gonzalez, please.
Leticia.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez.
Well, Mrs. Gonzalez.
Mrs. Leticia. I do have a question, and it's on page. Where is it? Has to do with an activity account. Purchase of T-shirt. I can't find it. I think you pulled it. No, hold on. Oh yeah, it's on page 8. Castro Jose. Purchase of wellness T-shirts for central office staff.
I would have to look into it. I'm not sure. They were ordered by Jose Escobedo, but I'm not sure the details of the purchase. So I will get that information to you.
So we can order that out of activity accounts then?
Well, the wellness account is set up under an activity account. And so any contributions that are made do go into that activity account. And then any purchases related to it come out of that as well.
Okay. My other question is on page 51. And it has to do with Scantron Corporation. This might be a Dr. Murphy question. Do we use Scantron Corporation, Dr. Murphy? I didn't realize, I thought you had left. Do we use Scantron Corporation? We don't use NCS Pearson? Because it says NCS Pearson Reports.
This is Tax Reports 2010-11.
Uh-huh. Scantron Corporation, page 51.
I think that's a John Warren question.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to get information from you.
And that's okay, I'm not questioning.
I don't know why.
No, and that's okay, I'm just wondering if.
Mr. Warren is probably still here. You want to go get him?
No. That you can
just
okay,
get
yeah, I'll provide it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's.
It's all right, Mark.
That's it.
Thank you.
Miss Mendoza, are we in agreement to recommend it? Miss Mendoza, are we in agreement to recommend it to the full board?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. And now we'll take it to the next agenda item.
That would be in the 2C, compliance calendar review.
2B?
I'm sorry, 2B, review of July 1st, the 31st, 2011, district financial and evaluation and recommendation to the board to see.
No problem. I see that this is the new format as well?
Yes.
And is this going to be the new format for our financials as well?
The financials, this is a format for financials.
Okay, and I guess if I remember, go ahead and then I'll.
Okay. And, you know, typically when I do the report, I usually have a comparison, but because July was actually the first month of the new fiscal year, and if I compare it to last year in July, which was the 11th month of that fiscal year, the expenditures wouldn't present a natural picture of the comparison. So for that matter, I won't be providing a comparison like I normally do. But if we go to page one of fund 196 and 199, the local and the high school allotment. We have revenues right now collected at 7.43%, which is about $3.3 million. And at this time last year, again being the end of the year, it was 86.14%, which was about $35.2 million. Under the expenditures, we had expensed $1 million this month, this last month, and last year we had expensed $36.4 million at this time last year. And under page two, which is State Comp Ed Funds, Fund 185, we currently have expensed 1.43% of the budget, which is about $45,000. And again, just being that we're on the first year at this point. With this, next year we will be able, I know that throughout the year I wasn't able to actually do a comparison for you because prior to school year 10-11, we were combining SCE funds with high school allotment and local funds. And this last year, we actually separated them because of the compliance issues that are associated with SCE. And so it was it allowed us to monitor closer. On page three, which is food service, fund 101, as of July 31st, our revenue collected was nothing. We haven't collected anything yet. And at this same time last year, we had collected 88.84%, which was about $4.1 million. And expenditures for this last month was at $53,000. Last year we had expensed $3.6 million at this same time last year. Under page four for debt service, as of July 31st, we have collected $11,000. In revenue, and we've expensed at the same time last year, we had revenues of $5.3 million. And we haven't expensed any funds this for July. Last year, at this same time, we had expensed $1.7 million. August is actually the month that we pay our debt service or bond payments. And so next month, there will be, you will notice that there will be an increase in expenditures. Under page five, the cash and investment balances. As of July 31st, the cash in the bank is $26.9 million. This same time last year, we had $27.5, and it's a decrease of $602,000. Now you'll see that one considerably increase at the end of August 31st because the bond proceeds will be deposited on August 25th. So you'll see a drastic change there. Under page six, analysis of tax collections. We are currently reflecting $57,000 in tax collections. Our heaviest months of collecting on property taxes, of course, begins in December and goes through about February and maybe March. But pretty much through the summer, we don't see a large amount. And at this time last year, the district had collected $17.2 million. Under page seven, the comparative tax collection report, the district has budgeted $20.7 million in collections for this new year of 2011-12. Again, we've collected $57,000. And last year, we had collected 101% of our property tax collections. We had collected 17.2. Last year's projection was about 16 million in property taxes, and actually, last year we had budgeted for $17 million in tax collection, and we actually collected 17.2 million. So it was a very good year. Under page eight, which is a workers' compensation fund, we paid out $38,000 in premiums this last July, and last July we had paid out $370,000. And again, it's a difference of we're at the beginning of the fiscal year, where last year we were at the tail end of it, so it was cumulative. We have paid out in claims $13,000 this year, and last year we had paid out $123,000. and we have a nexus of revenues over expenditures of $24,000 for this current year. Under page 9, which is the health care fund, we have received $401,000 in premiums, which is pretty much one month's work of collection, where last July we had collected $4.7 million, and again, it was at the end of the year. And we have paid out $219,000 in claims for the month of July. And last year, we had paid out $3.5 million in claims at this same time. Under the construction budget analysis, which is page 10, as of July 31st, we have expensed $2.2 million. And again, it's only 1 month's activity, but we paid for the land last Friday. And so that is where that big expenditure is being recorded. And at this same time last year, we had expensed $415,000. Currently, we have encumbrances of $820,000 in addition to the $2.2 million that we've expensed. And we don't have any enrollment reports for this month, but next month I will be able to present for the last week of, or for the first couple of weeks of school.
Martha, I have a question on the land purchase for elementary 106. I see we have budgeted $2,253,000. Looks like we've spent $2,282,000. What accounted for the difference?
I think, first of all, the $10,000 was an escrow deposit.
Oh, yes.
And
uh-huh,
that,
it
that
was.
Will be refunded.
Okay.
So we ended up at $2.27. I don't know if Dr. Murphy has any specifics on the change in price. We had budgeted $2,253,000. We paid $2,282,000.
The acreage had increased. And does this...
This includes closing costs as well. So
that
I don't know
that's
if
what it is. The closing costs.
And the acreage.
Yeah.
Remember, we had projected a smaller...
No, but this is... No,
the $30,000.
Yeah.
It's
closing.
The
closing costs.
Okay.
I thought you were looking at
coming
the,
back in. Okay.
I thought you were at the 2 point.
It's 2.25.
Yeah, 2.28, 2.19. And we projected
2.25.
Right there. Okay. So we're still pretty much almost in budget within. The project.
We went over budget by 20,000.
But this is of the 2006. But this also included grading and all that, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Can you share more?
Well, first of all, let's be clear. We told the voters we were going to pay $2.25 million for the land, and that is the price that Hunt agreed to pay for it. The money above 2.25 must be closing costs, and please let's look into
and
that.
I can provide a printout of the detailed cost on it.
But that is, they agreed to pay to sell to that amount.
When we signed, when she gave us
the.
Did everybody get one or
no? But I don't know.
I'll get one.
And what I'm saying is the 2006 when we first went out for the bond program, we set this money aside. And that was to include the campus as well as the grading for that campus for the smaller. Now we increase the size of the acreage of the campus. So now that's where.
My
that's
only
what
question was the difference between 2.25 and 2.82.
Eight. Okay.
And I think they've hit it, that it's a closing cost.
I just want to clarify the grading. And the improvements that Hunt are doing is everything up to the curb, and including the curb. But it does not include inside the curb. And now, Ernesto, now I'm remembering. There was some additional cost beyond the 2.25 minimal that they are banking for cut-ins when we finally decide where our driveways are going to go. Right? What's that? What's the term for that?
Those are the you know, the center islands on the roads. As right now they're running, they've already built them, they're sitting out there, and there's going to be a cost incurred. So when the design is put together, we want a certain cut in those islands so that our vehicles, our buses, and all that could get into the school. At this point, the city has agreed to a very early design that they had for their development, and so this is continuous, and that's typical. Usually when a developer comes in and develops, like, let's say, for example, apartment complexes, and they decide, okay, we're going to enter through here, then they do their curb cuts to get into the property.
And they took some money in bank for that. I'm almost certain that's part of it, too. We can find all that out. We're really excited that we got it. The grading is not included inside the actual property. That is developmental costs above the 2.25. And remember, our people did not want the grading to be done by Hunt anyway, because all Hunt was willing to do was a rough grade, and they felt like Hunt would do it, we'd have to pay for it, and then we'd have probably to come back and do it a second time. So the idea was to do it all at once.
Dr. Murphy, with not the grading, but the curb cuts, if they're giving us everything up to our curb, shouldn't they incur the cost of the curb cut and not us?
I can get you an explanation. I don't want to speak.
Squeeze them a little harder, Dr. Murphy.
Well, we've already signed everything. But I can get a full explanation.
Okay.
For it.
Thank you, Martha.
Was that it, Mr.?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And that's it of the report?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Mendoza, do you have any questions?
No, thank you.
Ms. Casares?
No.
Ms. Gonzalez?
No, sir.
No. Just on the next one, what I would like to see on page 5, if you could add a different one, so that way we see how much money is in each investment pool or our bank.
It is on the if you see down the left side, we start with Wells Fargo, and then it's Texpool, and then it's Long.
No, those are our investment pools.
Yes.
And across to see how much, whether it's health insurance, workers' compensation.
That is across the top. So, for example, if you see Logic, on the first column, the $542,000 is under from the operating account. Those are funds that are being invested that are from the operating, and there are no other funds being.
No, I understand that, but what I'm saying is at the right hand side, the total, if one has one or two or more.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay.
Total per pool.
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions? No? Ms. Mendoza, are we in agreement to recommend it to the board?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And now we'll take us to the next agenda.
Agenda 2C, compliance audit review.
Let's see how it goes.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Good evening, everybody.
Okay, so what we have here is an update from last month in terms of the progress on conducting and or completing follow-up activities on outstanding findings from either internal or external audits. And I'm starting to change the format of the report a little bit to make it a little bit easier to read, that kind of thing, so you might notice slight differences in the report. But basically, it's still in the general category of findings by fiscal year. And so the first section, we have four findings that were initially issued back in fiscal 08. And those are the ones that were related to the transportation area. And as I mentioned last month, those findings were the month of August, which is the month that we're in now. We are basically initiating a transportation audit. And during the course of that audit, we will actually conduct a follow-up on these four items. So that's kind of the status quo right now. We have begun the planning efforts on that audit, and so hopefully in the coming months we'll be able to kind of give you an update on what our verified status on those items is. Moving down to the findings related to fiscal 09, you'll see the implementation of textbook responsibility contracts that are signed by parents. We are in the midst of doing the textbook inventory audit, and during the course of that audit, we have had the opportunity to perform verification activities to verify that all, with the exception of one campus, is using these forms basically to kind of have students and parents acknowledge the responsibility for the textbooks that are issued to them. The one campus that isn't is essentially assigning all textbook materials to teachers, and so they're actually using a teacher responsibility contract and holding the teacher accountable for that. In addition to number one, the verification procedure to close out this finding is really just confirming that use of those contracts is in place. Through the course of the audit, we did find some issues with the form in terms of there was some, inconsistencies. In some campuses, we're having the students sign the contract. In other cases, we're having the parents sign the contract. And so that's one thing that we need to kind of bring to a consistent basis across the board. The other thing is the actual format of the contract itself. Prior to TIPWEB, there was a form, and I don't know, are you familiar with the form 4?
Yes.
Okay. Is the rest of the board? Me. And it's easier to show you than talking about it. Okay, so if you take the four-page pack that you've got in your hands, page 2 and 3 basically is the old contract. Okay, and you'll know that it has a verbiage explaining what the purpose of the contract is. It's got a reference to the relevant Texas Education Code. It's got a one space in the middle. And prior to TIPWEB, campuses were basically writing in. You know, some were handwriting, some were, getting together in Excel spreadsheet and then doing a cut and paste and basically taping it to this contract to list out the individual textbooks that were being assigned to students, and then the parents would sign down below. And you'll notice that the form was basically in English and Spanish, and at the very bottom it had the non-discrimination statement. Page 1 actually is a snapshot of what the form looks like in February. And you'll notice a big difference in that there is no explanation of what the purpose of the contract is, there's no reference to Texas Education Code, and there is no non-discrimination statement. Okay. And if you recall, and it's going to relate to an item that I talked about the last, is the recent TEA audit that happened back in March, April. One of the things that they're coming back with is, a related finding relative to the fact that we did have some publications that did not comply with the non-discrimination statement requirement. So what we're doing in the course of this audit, we're going to go ahead and close out the prior finding, because that was really strictly related to use of the contract itself. Under the current audit, we're basically making the change to bring this form into compliance. And so I've been working with Ernie Ortiz, who's the resource services coordinator, and he's been able to modify the TIPWEB form to incorporate the prior verbiage, incorporate the non-discrimination statement. And so now campuses will have a form that automatically generates a detail, provides the explanation to parents, and has a non-discrimination statement. So we'll basically kind of, on a go-forward basis, we'll be more compliant than we were before. Okay. Questions?
I do.
Go ahead.
You mentioned that one campus wasn't using, and of course you're gonna revise the form, but you mentioned one campus wasn't using the forms?
They were using the parent forms because their practice is to assign all textbooks to teachers. And so page 4,
mm-hmm.
is the teacher responsibility contract. And basically it shows you the detail that these are all textbook materials that have been issued to teachers. And so basically teachers have to sign this to acknowledge their responsibility. And so, for example, a teacher, in addition to receiving a textbook edition, they may receive a classroom set of textbooks that they then are responsible to kind of keep track of how their students are using those books.
My concern is, or I don't know if I should even, but what if, can the other campuses elect to do that too?
What we're doing right now in terms of working through the process is there's some process inconsistencies that we've noted, and we're trying to kind of see if we can bring everybody a little bit closer together so that we're all following the same practice.
Yeah.
Because when it comes to teachers, Texas Education Code does not legally allow us to basically charge them, and ultimately, because it's the students that are using these textbooks, Texas Education Code does to some extent allow us to hold them responsible. So it really kind of depends on how the
Because I like what you said, because I do recall signing one of these forms, but I never recall seeing this form. So I understand why the students are signing it, because they are the ones that are accepting this, the books itself.
Right. And if you look closely, even the TIPA form is specifically addressed to the parents or guardian of.
Exactly.
And so the issue of some campuses having students sign, you know, legally we cannot hold a student who's a minor, you know, to this contract. It's really, we really want to kind of ensure that the parents are signing, because they're the ones that we can, you know, to the extent possible with them.
How about laptops? Are you also addressing the laptops too?
In this audit, no, this audit is specific to textbooks. But going forward, with Senate Bill 6, it's really going to be more the approach of how do we address the instructional materials pool altogether, which potentially could include textbooks, calculators, computers, and any other kind of equipment that may fall under the instructional material category. But that's not specifically within the scope of this audit as well. Because this, I think, I know that a couple board meetings ago, school resources brought forward an initiative where basically it would address the use and being able to hold people responsible for any technology that they're issued. And Texas, it's the same reference to the same body of Texas Education Code, but it really says, to the extent that an employee has operated in good faith, we can't hold them liable. But, for example, if they're using it for personal reasons, we are able to, again, to some extent, hold them responsible while, you know, that equipment is in their possession and being used for personal reasons. And so I can follow up with Ms. Brigham and bring that, because I do remember that they did address that a couple board meetings ago.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that it? Anybody else? Question?
I do. This form was already being used previous year.
This past year, basically, some campuses were using just the TIPA form. Mm-hmm. Other campuses were using the old form, and some campuses were actually using the combination of both. And so, again, when I refer to some inconsistent practices relative to this, that those are the things that we're talking about, and those are the things that we're addressing during the context of the current audit.
And are we going to continue to use this form this school year?
Yeah, but basically, as of now, Mr. Ortiz has we spoke with the TIPA vendor, our rep is the name of Ms. Debbie Dinsler, mm-hmm. and she basically, there's a default format for this. Mr. Ortiz was able to edit it, incorporate the verbiage from the older contract, including the non-discrimination statement, and update that, because if you look at the old form, even the contact information on the non-discrimination statement was out of date, mm-hmm. so basically we're kind of trying to do our best to bring it all into compliance. The one thing that we're still unsure is whether or not, because if you look at the form as the way it stands now, there's no header on it. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to see if we can at least get a generic header. We do know that the vendor told us we're not able to import an actual image, so the actual CISD logo we may not be able to have. So one of the two options is put a generic header, or allow the campuses to print it on their own
website. We're going to distribute this with like the enrollment packet for parents to sign?
Yeah, basically what we've done is this week the initial changes were completed, and so basically my understanding is some campuses are going to start issuing books next week during registration, and they can use this form because this form is actually in the production system as of now.
Okay.
So we'll be, with the use of this form, even though it may not be perfect yet, it's still much more compliant in this state than it was in the last year.
Okay. I'm trying to make sense of it. So when are the parents actually going to sign it? Before or after the textbooks are actually distributed?
Well, that's actually one of the issues that we're trying to work through, because and part of it is a time issue. In the course of doing the physical counts, after we finished those counts, mm-hmm. I met with each individual that was in the textbook inventory manager role to have some discussion and see, okay, show me the practice and let's walk through it. What we found is that the elementary campuses, the parents are much more involved and the parents are there when the books are being issued, and so they get those signatures then. At the middle school and the high school, there's really where you have more of the practice of student signing because the parents aren't there. The kids are going up by themselves and doing that. I am having what I call a work session with all of the roles from all the campuses, all the people that are responsible for managing these textbooks to basically analyze the current processes. That is one of the things that we're going to address because I exchanged some email with our legal counsel, and basically he's the one that confirmed if we have a student sign, legally we cannot hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. Practically, I think so long as nobody challenges it, and that's kind of the current situation at this point, nobody's really kind of come back and formally challenged it. You know, if the student has signed, typically what seems to happen is that student will get called in, they'll come in with their parent, the assistant principal will ask the student, well, you know, did I not give you these books if it's not your signature? Student will say yes, and then the parent will, basically, if they're able to pay, they'll reimburse for the textbooks, that kind of thing.
Have we explored options to digitize this process, to do it online at all, or no, it's not available?
The way the current system is set up right now, this is because right now we're requiring a hard signature. Mm-hmm. We'd have to kind of get into the business of verifying and electronic signatures, that kind of thing. We'd have to set up parents with accounts, and that's definitely something that we can consider for the future, but I think for the immediate need, because we're still relying on that hard, you know, signature, we're looking at a situation where we can basically generate a document that has all the relevant information, and literally the only thing the parent has to do is sign.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else?
I have one question, and I know you probably haven't completed and reported. The one campus that was holding the teachers accountable for the text, did you find a variance? Did they intend to not lose as many textbooks as the other three or four campuses that?
I guess at this point I would say not necessarily, and what I should do is share with you.
Wondering if it was working out better.
Keep in mind this is draft because the audit is not finalized. So basically what you're seeing.
So this is a working document?
It's a working document, yes. What you're seeing are the initial results of the fiscal accounts, and it shows the respective textbook inventories for each campus. It shows the detailed. The total amount in terms of how much the campuses were short in terms of inventory, how much they were over. And what you're going to see is that overall, none of the campuses really had shortages greater than 3.2%. And that's as it relates to their total inventory. And so kind of from a practical standpoint, that's actually pretty good. We're still working to finalize the numbers, but my understanding is for the most part, every single campus did better than they did last year. I think there may be one or two campuses that maybe didn't. One of those maybe, the one that's not using the apparent responsibility contracts, but there are other issues that kind of factor in. And again, part of it is a matter of teachers complying with the request to return their textbooks, same as, students complying with the request to return the textbooks so they can be counted. There's other issues in terms of situations that could allow, for example, I think one of the campuses, and I can't remember which specifically, they expressed a concern where in the textbook room, there's a couple of folks that have a key to that in addition to the person that's responsible for the textbook, so that basically allows that individual the potential to bypass the process. And so those kinds of things are definitely going to affect the ability to hit 100% of these numbers. But again, and this is a message that I've certainly communicated back to the people in this role, based on these current numbers, if you're looking at 3%, that's 3% shortage rate out of the entire inventory. For example, in high school, because they've got the biggest inventory, they've got over $500,000 in inventory, but out of that, they only had a total of about 80,000 shortage, just 3%. Previously, they were at 40,000. And so, we definitely are making progress in this area. And are we at 100%? No, but I don't know that 100% is realistic because there are going to be some factors that we just can't control.
Natchez, my understanding, and I don't understand much, at Northwest, we as a district are purchasing their college textbooks. And are those the textbooks that are...
No, the ones that are counted here were just the ones that are on TEA adopted.
Okay.
Thank you. Basically, Northwest and other campuses have other instructional materials, other books that they buy separate from, you know, the TA.
I understand.
And some campuses have a separate access database, for example, that they're managing, using to manage those inventories. Some are managing it on an Excel spreadsheet, and some are doing it on paper and pencil. And so, again, that's one of the other issues that when we're looking at this holistically in terms of how we manage our textbooks, because we have, you know, a system named TIPWeb, you know, that is designed specifically for this, we definitely want to kind of, you know, explore the area of, well, why aren't we using TIPWeb for all of it? And again, with Senate Bill 6, it's really putting more responsibility on the district, because at this point, these textbooks are no longer the property of the state, they're now the property of the district.
Correct.
And so it behooves the district to be able to better track its own assets, be they textbooks, calculators, computers, or whatever. So those are some of the issues that we're going to be discussing with these folks next week, and hopefully, you know, out of the audit, we'll have some recommendations for us. How to maybe take the next step in moving towards that direction.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else, or?
I do.
Go ahead.
You have questions?
No, no.
I have more questions. So this is set the big picture.
The only thing that's not shown here is the warehouse inventory.
Meaning?
Meaning this reflects the physical counts that we've done at the campuses only. The warehouse is the one that's still in front of us.
Okay. My question is that there's lost textbooks. Where are we going to get the money to replace those books?
And again, there's the interesting thing is that different campuses, depending on the level, have been doing different things. For example, I've had some of the elementary campuses basically come back and explain that a lot of their population of students and families can't afford to pay.
Okay, let's forget that.
And so we're waiting. But there's other campuses, another elementary campus, for example, has expressed that what they do is they basically have a fundraiser to help offset the cost of shortages. I've got a middle school that is basically pursuing civil lawsuits against the parents, and my understanding is that they have done that successfully.
What I would like to add is that after the inventory, and actually we're going to wait till after registration because we are hoping that they actually try to collect some additional books, either books or funds, at registration. There is a deadline for campuses to submit payment for the lost books for their particular campus.
So what is the amount here that each campus needs to return to each to the general fund or
to
their
the textbooks?
Fund. Yeah,
and again, it's tentative, but basically you're looking at the district total of the $29,000. If you look at column D,
yeah,
that's the amount that they're going to need for, because that's a shortage amount. Basically, column F represents the overage amount. That amount's actually going to get added to their inventory. And so there might be a slight movement.
More or less.
Mm-hmm. More or less.
So it'll be at 29,000 average.
Because we're still, I think that the market for me, if I'm wrong, but that deadline is August 25th.
It is.
So basically, on August 25th, the monies will be swept. Prior to, my understanding is that because there's time between now and the 25th, to the extent that campuses can find the book and contact students and parents and say, bring it back because we need to count it, that's why there might be some movement in there. That's what we're looking at.
And I know we discussed this in our last curriculum meeting, but I know that the state will eventually do away with textbooks.
Yeah, but basically what's happened now is that they're giving us an allotment and they're saying, okay, here's our adopted list and stuff. We're not going to force you to buy all of it here, but you need to certify that the materials that you have purchased, be they hard copy textbooks, e-books, computers, what have you.
Exactly.
You need to certify that they contain the materials for TEKS and STAR.
You're in your own and you do what you have to do, so we have to develop something else.
And actually, that is one thing that kind of, because it came up during this audit, we're really having to change gears a little bit, because we're no longer looking at just textbooks. We're looking at the category of instructional materials,
exactly,
whatever that means to us.
The chair, I apologize, I just stepped out. Did you talk about how the $29,000 is in relation to how it was last year and the year prior?
I'm still getting the final number, so I don't want to kind of state that. But generally speaking, my understanding is that we are doing better this
Much
year than
better.
We did last year.
What is the not the exact number, but what's your estimation on those?
Well, last year, my understanding is that we were about $300,000 difference. And again, I don't want to give you a number in terms of where we're at this year, but this number represents the nine campuses. I still haven't counted the warehouse. But I do know that TEA's total number for our inventory was about $2.3 million. These nine campuses represent about $2.1 million. So worst case, that drops it down to about $200,000. So I think, you know, even in terms of the warehouse, we're going to fare better.
And the year before that?
The year before that, I can get you a number.
I believe it was over $300,000, like $350,000 or something.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, there's been a definite... I guess a decreasing trend in terms of the variances.
There had been a problem, and I think that was one of the issues, and that's why we had our auditor look at the...
Right, and I think that they did a great job with even starting this process. I know that they did a lot of work, and...
Well, I do know that, you know...
And it's still a work in progress.
It's been in place for about a year, but again, just... And again, I mean, this is something that I stress, because I did present these numbers at district leadership to the principals, because I think... The people that we have in these roles are very diligent about what they do.
Right.
But that's not to say that they aren't faced with challenges that to some extent are beyond their control. But if you really just look at it on a campus by campus level, you know, we've got, you know, our worst campus is operating at a 97% accuracy rate. You know, 3% shortage out of, you know, over $500,000. That's actually not bad at all. So what we're looking to do is have a discussion to say, okay, how can we make that number even smaller? And I think the way we can get there is have some discussion, share some best practices across the campuses, you know, and realistically start saying, okay, is 100% even a realistic one? I'm not so sure that it is. But, you know, if we can make the, you know, 3% go down to 2, you know, right, that's a game.
So the campuses, the administration staff from each campus is motivated to get these numbers down. They know.
Oh, absolutely. In their mind, their goal is to have zero shortages, which, I mean, that makes half my job done.
I think one of the good things, and I mean, going back to the position as internal auditor and bringing that on, looking at efficiencies and being more effective as well as internal controls, I think it's been able to, more than that, you know, putting these systems in place where there's accountability has been able to save the district a lot of money at the same time, you know, just pay your salary. I mean, if you look at 2-3 years, and I mean, it was a consistent problem, $300,000, I mean, that's a large portion the district is losing compared to what we're looking at now. So
I do have to say that, to the credit of, you know, of financial services or the warehouse people, you know, by all means, doing a really good job. They're on top of, you know, legislation requirements, that kind of thing. In the course of the audit, I've seen a lot of good communication between them and the campuses. That's not to say that there aren't issues, because there's issues everywhere, but, you know, it's definitely the what I see is everybody's willing to work together, because everybody's really trying to get to zero. I give credit to the people that we've got in those roles.
So, any other questions? Were you done on the report, or you still need it?
Well, that's just the that one.
Yeah, the first page.
Yeah. I'll zip through the rest.
No problem. Take your time.
Okay, so on page 2, item number 6, again, that one, the target completion date for that is basically the end of this month, and so I will be doing follow-up, but I have had some interim contact with Ms. Gonzalez, and she's in the process. She's communicated to me that 4 of the 9 campuses have actually incorporated it in you know, the what it is basically it's incorporating into the faculty handbook a body of text that clearly delineates to the teachers they are going to be held responsible for, you know, any textbooks, instructional materials that are issued to them. And this finding is really related to formalizing that into the faculty handbook. So at the end of this month, hopefully the rest of the campuses will follow through, but I will come back to you at the end of this month. I'll let you know.
Sure.
Okay. Next item down is, again, related to the current textbook audit. And because the high school had the biggest inventory, I have to assume that was the reason why this particular finding was specifically related to that campus. But again, through the course of the current audit, working with their textbook clerk, did verify that, you know, as of June 2010, you know, the individual assumed the position as textbook clerk. Since then, they have made quite a few improvements, just in terms of organization of the textbooks themselves, They started using TIFWIP to manage their textbook inventories, in addition to a separate database to manage other instructional materials. They got a second textbook room altogether, and so, again, like I said earlier, a lot of the general process and re-engineering of the existing process back then has resulted in a decrease from 40,000 to 70,000 this year in terms of textbook inventories and shortages.
Okay. And the last?
The last two are just real quick. They're in my continuing quest to find new audits and really kind of discover, okay, what are all the other findings that we're going to need to follow up, you know, during the course of the year, that kind of thing. Item number eight is really about a year ago, there was a TEA came down and did an audit of how we were complying with administration of Title I funds. And basically, if you remember from the audit plan that was approved, we've got a Title I audit coming up in February. Those findings will be followed up in conjunction with that audit. So it's just kind of a placeholder at this point. And then the last item is a placeholder for the recent TEA audit. We received the preliminary report back on the 25th. I believe you guys got a copy of that report in your Friday packet last week. And so at this point, the report is still in a preliminary state. On the 17th or 18th, we're going to submit a response to basically say we agree with the report. As of that date, the report will become final. And so as of that date, I will update the calendar with the two findings. But from a preliminary standpoint, we've got one finding relative to the non-discrimination statement and the second finding related to the 41. And what we're doing right now is we're in the process of working with administration to kind of put together the action plan that we're then going to turn around and submit back to TEA to address the fight. So again, at this point, this is the place we'll look at that.
Ms. Gonzalez?
I have a question because I know that I had asked for a copy and we provided it to the whole board and we received it, but it was very, very generic. So
that and was the detailed report.
That's actually all that they provided because the report itself is it's got a cover letter that basically explains the timeline, you know, within which we have to respond. And then the rest is really just their report is extremely generic. And if you look down the list, on the items where it says not observed, those basically indicate the clients are being responsive.
Okay. Any other questions or that was it?
Nobody?
Okay, and I thank you. Ms. Hidalgo, and I guess I'll take us to the next agenda.
And the true theme of discussion and formulation of recommendations for board trustees for the architectural services for 2011 body projects.
Board members, good afternoon. I'm here to, since we purchased the land, we'd like to ask the board to, or the committee, to consider the discussion formulation of bringing to the board for consideration going out for RFQs for architectural services. That being said, you know, the choice could be that it be Architect A services for the pre-K through 8 project. And of course, we have other projects within the bond, which are a couple of gymnasiums and some remodels and major projects. And the other consideration is to go for architectural services at the same time for what I would consider various projects. In other words, have more than one architect involved in the overall projects, or if the committee so chooses to bring to the board, just have one architect for all the bond projects. Something to consider for discussion.
And through the chair, just to follow up and finish that, we have this on the agenda for Tuesday night for possible action. We know that you guys are interested in moving forward with an RFQ, and basically we want to put this item here tonight to simply get your direction and thoughts as to how we should bring this back to you for formal action.
Ms. Members?
Sir, what is your recommendation?
Well,
first, we do have to go out for RFQs because we keep on moving with the projects. You know, eventually we're going to come into a project that will require AE services, full set drawings, and things like that. And I need for the board to direct me to direct us to which architect we should give the project. So my recommendation, because of the large amount of projects, the way I see it is, you could have an architectural, an AE services for the pre-K through a project, and then we could possibly spread, quote unquote, the wealth to other firms. Right now, the El Paso, you know, I've been approached by a lot of architects and engineers that are telling us that the only people that they're really looking at is Socorro ISD and ourselves, because we're the ones that put out the largest bond projects, and things are rather slow. If it wasn't for Fort Bliss, they would be in deep trouble. So, having said that, you know, it also would help us to have various architects to do possibly other projects, and they become more competitive for one. They're competitive in costs, in fees, that is, and also competitive in design. You probably get a lot more interesting designs because now they're vying to stay in service with us. Yeah. That would be just my recommendation.
Does anybody else? I think, I mean, I was going to ask for the recommendation too from administration. And I think, just me personally, I think I would like to see, you know, more than just one, whether it be, I don't know how the other projects would work, but I think the K8 is one project in itself, and the other projects we would need to look at. And maybe that might be one, and then we could have somebody for a small, sort of like what we did a couple of years ago. We had somebody just on retainer on the roll of small ones if it was $100,000 or something that needed to be done. So I don't have a problem with the administration's recommendation, but
would we have an RFQ then where they would present, here, come and present, this is what you want to tell us for our pre-K 8, and then here, come and tell us what you would like to do for the rest of the?
Right, at the board's direction, I would write the RFQ whichever way you want it. We could separate it from, you know, okay, we need architectural services, a fee. Well, we can't ask for a fee, but there are qualifications for the pre-K through 8. And then another one we could itemize and say for Gym 1, Gym 2, CMS, I can itemize it. And then we could also ask for an aggregate of it so that we could get the better price. I mean, the better approach. But remember, for AE services, we cannot ask for fees. We cannot ask for their fee. We have to go for qualification. In other words, we interview.
RFQ.
Yeah, RFQ.
Request for qualification.
If we added RFP to the RFQ?
They could. You could put it under there, what they're proposed, just so we get an idea, sort of what we did with the... And I think we would need to go to council, sort of what we did for the RFQs on the legal council. I think maybe on Monday we would have better direction. Just real quick, when the district went out for the high school, I think they came to the board. This last time they didn't come to the board. I don't mind either. What I would like to see if it was, because they gave us recommendations, like here's three firms that are good, maybe they could come and present. Last time they didn't do that. They just gave us, here's this. What we can do is sort of set up a committee, sort of like the health benefits thing is set up, where we could have two board members sit on that, so that way with the administration. But there's an administrative reg that was designed on the last time. If we could look at that, get some ideas, as well as see what our legal counsel
recommends. All of the RFQs that I've done, we don't ask for a fee because
they will not. In fact, the AIA will, the AIA local chapter will come and present and explain why legally you cannot. But what we can do is we can ask for the qualifications. The board will select, you know, one, two, three, or, you know, these three, and then we'll negotiate the fees with them. And then that's still contingent on the board's approval. If you don't agree with that fee, then, you know, we move on to B and C and down the line.
Well, the thing is, you know, the sort of like what we were going on the other one, then they could pick up the top three or see if they're qualified or not qualified. If they're not qualified at all, then we take them out of that list. And if they are qualified, then administration could go back and say, okay, well, what would you be looking at a fee for this and that? And so that way we could. And I guess we could discuss it more on Monday. I'm more comfortable on legal, on Tuesday. When legal, that I don't have a problem spreading the word. I think it's sometimes beneficial, but we also need to look at the option. I mean, for sure we need to spread it into, but look at the option of what's beneficial on the smaller projects, or spread it in three or whatever the projects are.
Will we look out of town?
Well, it will be advertised, and it will be advertised for out of town. I know the ones that we've done at the clinic had people, interested parties from all the way to Dallas, and really Dallas and Phoenix.
I like the idea of having more than one, because my experience is in El Paso. I mean, it's going to be a big project to do our pre-K-8. And I would think they need to focus on that and find someone else to
do the other.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
And I guess administration, if y'all could come back with sort of a design template of looking at that administrative reg and see how that committee would be, and then that way we could pick more at it since we have something structured instead of just throwing out ideas.
And I would like to see a multitude of people that we speak to, we look at, we hear them instead of just, here, this is who it's going to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like the way we did it for our legal counsel.
And I think
it was very fair and very
a good thing would be like administration looking at that so that way they could get rid of the non-qualified or whatever, and then bringing the preferred, and sort of what's done at the Health Benefits Committee, where you have two board members just overseeing, and so.
Yeah, and I know that at Flint, when I was there, administration interviewed or had the presentation of close to, I think they were 20 that showed up for the last bond they had, which was like about 5 years ago. And things were real bad at that time. So we had about 20 architects and engineers. And the board had said, bring us the top five, or the top four, I think it was the top four. And then that's what administration did. They went to the board and said, okay, these are the top four, and then they presented to them. This is exactly what you were saying.
Yeah. Any other ideas or anything? Any before we move on to the next agenda, and then they could bring us. Go ahead.
Okay, so we have regulation about the committee work for the RFQ. So we need to dig that up. And we need to dust that off and get that pretty for and bring that for Tuesday night in the discussion there. And then I'm hearing direction or at least suggestion regarding one architectural RFQ for the pre-K-8, and then at least one other for the other projects.
At least.
And beginning on the pre-K-8 immediately, as quickly as possible, would that be? Or at least getting the things together for the RFQ.
Well, the RFQs would all go out.
Do it simultaneously?
The RFQs would go out and we would decide, and then, we would decide on all of them, and depending on what projects are in order or whatever, then we
what we're going to do is we're going to look at the administration regulation that might be out there and then bring it to the board Tuesday. And also, the board is going to approach council to see what can be done okay, with it. Then Tuesday, the board would give us directive on the RFQ. How do they want us to approach the RFQ?
And then we'll start work from there.
Right.
If we can send that regulation via email and deliver Ms. Searles to your home on Monday. Just that regulation.
We'll be
find
looking
it
on Monday.
We can get it out to them.
I think I'm.
You might have.
I'm not too sure. I'm looking for one.
We're not talking about CB for the
accountability,
right?
It's an administrative reg. It's not a.
It's not a policy.
It's a regulation.
Yeah, it's what, or sort of what the framework of what goes on with the.
Are we gonna be here all night, Linda?
Maybe.
We'll get to you on Monday.
Okay.
Hey, sometimes you be welcome.
Damn, this is what I want.
Oh, the queen is here.
Tony, they want the regulation on RFQ committees and how we operate with that.
Okay, I'll need to go find it. Can you read this for me?
Okay, we need Dr. Murphy, I think we need a laptop just for someone to be using it in case we need to look up something.
We have one on order for our office, and I'll have it in here for all of our
Well, even so just fine. Some.
What would it be under? What would it be?
I don't know.
If you were searching for it, it'd be regulation.
It was a reg that I think Pam did.
RFQs?
RFQs for just like external audits.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of all the framework. It's just come up with a framework where it's in paper and it's presented to us so that way we can look at it. Okay, and so I guess that would, does anybody else have any questions on this item? No? Can we go to the next agenda item?
The next agenda is the review of the 2011 bond part 8 priorities and formulation recommendations to the board of trustees. You're supposed to be reading that, I'm sorry.
Yes, agenda 2E, review of 2011 bonds, part 8, priorities and formulation of recommendations for the board of trustees.
Sorry. And this one, you're supposed to receive something like this on a board packet thing?
Mm-hmm. Does everybody have a, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it's just, let me just give a little bit of background, and I think, Martha could do that better than I can. I know that we received notification from our bond council that we needed to develop or create a list of projects for the first $22 million that they were going out for. And this came in all of a sudden for us put together. And what I did is out of that bond project, I just collected put together a list of what I felt kind of went well together for the first $22 million and what I felt that would be amenable to the board, but understanding that this is living, that this is not final. In other words, we had to give them something in order for them to go out and put the bond. But they told us that we could make that the board or the administration or the board could make some changes to the list.
Basically, the need for that was because prior to the actual pricing of the bonds, we needed to submit an IFA application. Although for this current biennium, there is no funding, we need to make sure to be in line with a somewhat of a project proposal so that if in the event that next biennium the money is available, that we are already kind of in line with our project listing.
Can we look at getting I guess this is a proposed first 22, but I want to see the proposed second part. And so that way, if we need to pull something from there, then we're able to.
Yes.
That's one thing I would want to see. The other question I have regarding putting the full new campus 106 on there, and that's why I would like to see the other ones to see if they're more of a priority to move up to this. Because when are we looking at selling our bonds, the second?
Next series? Next July.
So it's around the same time.
So,
I mean, just even looking at this, if we were to even
we wouldn't even give final payment. We would, like, how long is phase, design phase? Let's say we go out for RFPs, we don't start RFPs till September, October. Let's say October, about 2-3 months. We probably won't get an architect till January. The design phase is another probably 6 months.
Six to eight months.
That's
what the board is looking at.
And so then the design phase from there to the actual construction, and we don't pay the full construction till towards the end, or till construction is throughout the project. So it wouldn't. So that's why I would like to see the other ones. I think
what you're saying, if I understand this correctly, and I'm trying to follow here, is that possibly get the architectural services separated from this 106. That could be done, and then
we could start. I mean, we need to start on the architectural services right away. We need to start the. That's, but it takes time for us to actually design it. Unless we were to go to a different route, a design build, but that's not set up that way. So the. To put this full amount on the first 2011 on the $22 million that we just sold is, I think there's other priority projects that even if we start the project right away, we're not. I mean, we have money that we could use it.
Yeah, and you're right. And some of these, like I said, we kind of put them together because they seem to work. But I understand, like, some of these projects probably wouldn't start till the summer because they're not, you know.
Because we probably won't hire architects till probably January once the whole process, right? You all say it takes about 60 to 90 days, is that correct?
Well, for AE services, if we were to kick it in, this advertisement is like about, it's about 16 weeks. Altogether, not advertising, but you know, you have to put it out.
Yeah. So let's say we get the architect on board on January. That's probably the closest we could get it because we could. It wouldn't be in 90 days.
Yeah.
We could do that, and then if we get all our architects on board. But this is a major project, so what architectural services would probably be how much out of that?
You mean the timeline or the
amount? Would it be the 6%? Is that what? If we were to pay in full, and we won't till towards the end.
Worst cases, yeah.
6% of 16 is what?
9.
Well,
that's
going to
be 6%.
800 grand.
Yeah.
6% of 16 million?
Actually,
it's
960,000. Yeah. 6% of 960,000. Is 960,000? So, I mean, we could set aside 2 million. So, if we needed to do dirt work too, because we could actually do that at the same time on the grading so we can move it faster. Go ahead.
Armando, is what I'm hearing you say that they've got 16 million of our 22 million that's allotted for this year held up with this new campus, when you feel projecting and looking forward that we're not going to need that money until next July when we sell the second round? And so what you'd like to see is us put this money to work right now because we're not going to use it for our new campus until next year. Hold 2 million for the new campus in lieu of architectural fees
and maybe grading
and possible some grading or whatever, something that might
whatever would speed the project up.
But to use this 16 million or, you know, drop two off, make it, you know, 14 million for the other projects. Mm-hmm.
And that's why I want to see that's why I would like to see
I'm hearing the same thing, and that's the board's prerogative, you know.
And that's why I would like to see the other 22 million project list, so that way we could say, you know what, this is a priority for us, you know, if it's wetlands, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So that's something that on Tuesday, if we could see. And I'll go with first.
We'll get it to you.
I'll go with the older first.
I want to make a recommendation.
I'll go with the older first.
Can I
Ms. Sherman, that is, as I was looking at this and I was comparing it to the money that we pulled to start in some summer projects, I don't see that we're starting to work on any of the air conditioning, and I think it would behoove us to start that project during the winter when we're not using the air conditioning units, and I don't see it on here. Did you consider that?
I did, and that's a very good question. The reason I didn't put it, bring it up, is that there are other parties right now, like U.S. Power, there is Chevron, and there is Johnson Controls that are interested in presenting to the board, to administration and to the board, and providing some recommendations on how to approach this. And so that's going to take time. That's also going to be kind of a long process similar to that. What they're going to present to the board is possibly some savings, maybe a different approach, something different that I'd like the board to have the opportunity to see that side of what, instead of us going out, maybe they're going to bring something to the table that would benefit us. And that is one of the reasons why I agree with you. It's a nice time to do it. Yes and no, it all depends, you know, but I don't want to just go out and say, let's do the air conditioning and then later find out that there was another option somewhere out there.
Okay.
I don't want the board to come back, hey, why didn't you consider this? So we're looking at all options right now.
Do any of these companies offer like a study where they'll come and they'll observe and they'll tell us this is what our recommendation would mean?
Yes, in fact, as we speak, we're going to have Johnson Controls. We have Johnson Controls coming down to do an assessment of the campuses and give us their point of view as to what they recommend. How they recommend that we use the funds.
They come down in 2 days, that was scheduled, correct?
Yes. And then Chevron will follow through. I don't want them all at the same time.
Question.
Chevron will follow through, and Chevron has the same approach. Right now, Chevron is working with El Paso Community College. And in fact, they're doing their energy management, and they're also doing their air conditioning upgrades.
Okay.
U.S. Power came to us a long time ago. When I say a long time ago, about a year ago, and I haven't been able to make contact with them because I told them that I would consider inviting them if we were to approach that. And I think at that time we didn't know whether we were going to pass the bond or not. I mean, I was positive about it, but we didn't know that it was going to pass. So I just need to get a hold.
Go ahead, Mr.
Rodriguez.
Or, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, you go.
Mr. Coronado had requested this second list, so we can go over the priorities.
Okay.
And if we could have that. How soon can we have that document?
Tuesday. It's on the agenda.
It is on the agenda?
Yeah. Well, I'll have the list put together so that you can receive it Monday.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds like we're going to have to do a little special action on Monday.
Yeah. That's not a problem.
And the regulations.
It's just a remainder amount.
Okay.
But let's follow this direction and take $14 million or some odd off the new Campus 106 project. Bring $14 million more onto Part A.
Actually, Dr. Murphy, we could leave the $60 million because
just
the board is going to because the board is going to be provided with a list of funds that we have left over from the 2006. Once we finished all the projects, there's going to be a certain amount of money that's going to be left over. And you and the board might consider getting that.
What I've done is that in the process of, you remember the projects that, the summer projects that we started on, we indicated that we were going to use 2006 bonds. If you remember when we started with the bond proposal, we said we have 11 million existing 2006 bonds. We said 3 million were for bond relief, so that brings us to 8 million. And then we said about 1.7 million for the summer projects. So from the 8 million, it brings us down to about 6 million, 5.8 million. Then we purchased the land, which is 2.3 million. That brings us down to about 2.8 million. There are about $600,000 of the existing projects that he has been working on, like, for example, the security cameras. It's a project that still needs to be completed. So I guess when all is said and done, there's approximately $2 to $2.5 million from the 2006 bond that can, you know, as you were indicating, just pay architect fees or design fees. So the 2.5 existing could be used for those fees, and then the $16 million here could be assigned to additional projects once you review it.
Just real quick on some of the past projects that we put on the 2006 bond, if we could look at, especially like the security, we know technology is going crazy, and you know, like there's apps, and I think the most efficient, even if we have to invest, whether it's, you know, the apps that you have where if administration needed to check on the phone what's going on with this campus, and or go on, log on the computer, I think we need to have something really, really well. I don't know if that was in place on the other one, but if we could look at those options.
Actually, it was kind of good that it took this long for the surveillance project to start, only because, like you said, that because of technology, on the numbers and on the discussions that I've had with that company that originally bid on it, within the same number that they came up with, and that the board approved, he said he was able to give us the ability to remotely access the campus. That is to say, if the board wanted access to all the campuses, and if you have a smartphone, you could actually go to it and actually see what's going on. We wanted to do that only because it helps us if we have a security guard at night, or let's say, for example, if Pablo is concerned about the waste of a treatment plant out there, and at night he hears an alarm or he gets an alarm on it, he can actually get the phone from bed, look at it and see what's going on. It could be that somebody is inside the area. The same thing goes for security. When the security alarm hits in, any one of us would be able to get that. Like, I live far away from here, and I usually count on our people here, but now I can actually be watching what's going on, and so that's a benefit for us. But it is included in this this surveillance cameras bid.
Okay, that's neat to hear. Go ahead, Mr. Rose.
Mr. Armendariz, on the CMS parking lot improvement for $600,000. Is that with the band room, or am I?
No, this improvement, I think the board some years ago had hired a local firm to redesign the parking lot and paving area and ponding area and do some sidewalk improvements to separate the buses.
Yeah, there was
parents. And we have those drawings, so we really, you know, we have them, we own them. So that's what I would put out as a project, so we can bid out. So we can get some quotes in the project.
Spend all.
So can I have a
conference?
$600,000, though, is what?
The estimates that were originally received on that was somewhere in the neighborhood. I want to say maybe 5 years ago, because that's around the time that the school was being built. I think the same architects that did the high school, maybe 4 years ago, were at that time they were at 400 and something thousand. What I did is, for inflation and for other things, you know, that I, as I went out there, I realized that we didn't want asphalt. We talked about using concrete instead of asphalt.
But
out
did
there.
We go back and say no concrete, that we thought that was exorbitant?
Yeah, at the time that I was putting the numbers, yes. So that's what.
But
that's
we
what
did go against the concrete,
yeah,
so this will be asphalt?
Yeah.
Okay, and yet you still think it's going to be that?
Yes, because there's a lot of there's a lot of ponding conditions that we're creating out there.
Mm-hmm.
We're also doing a lot of concrete, at least as the drawings that I saw, we're doing a large plaza at the front, concrete sidewalks.
Okay, so it's more just changing the whole landscape of the parking lot.
Yes, and if I'm not mistaken, I also noticed that on the drawings they had a fence because of the fence. You know how it cuts off from the brick and then it goes back to chain link fence and all that?
Yes.
It's a continuation of that.
Okay, so it's way more than a resurface.
Yeah. Oh, and the other thing that it's more than just a paving. Is that I saw also that there are a lot of utility relocations. There's a lot of utilities that as they dig out, they're going to have to relocate.
And will that be coordinated with hooking up the sewer to that school? Am I correct? That's the school the sewer's hooking up to?
We don't have anything on the sewer, but it won't affect the sewer lines, though,
okay.
In the future. It won't, because sewer lines are further away from where this is happening.
So we
at least
need to
it's running, yes.
Coordinate that with sewer.
Yeah, we were not going to go back and have to dig up again.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm asking.
Now, this is happening. The lift station is way on the other side.
Okay. Thank you very much. Would it be possible if you shrunk
That's what I was going to ask. If
that
you
have for that.
Oh yeah, yes, I can
supply us with
Monday.
That?
I can send them out. Get somebody to reduce the size of those.
And everything that you're talking about right now, because is there already like a scope of work there ready to go off of along with the blueprints, or this is something that's coming into play now?
It's coming into play now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I just know that these drawings exist. I think the board may be aware of them. I know they've existed ever since I started about a year and a half ago. I saw them, I went through them, and that's how I came up with those numbers. In fact, at the time, I think we were going, there was, I think, with the attorneys to try to settle on this one, on the high school and this with the architect, so that they could release the rights to these things.
And this is then not set in stone. This will just be a concept and we can massage it.
If the board felt like, well, we don't like this design,
yes.
We want to change things, then great, I've got $600,000, I can bring another firm into the picture.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Armendarson. Thank you, Armando.
Okay, any other questions?
Yes,
just real quick,
yes,
just if we could have both project lists of the full bond program, the administrative reg, and the Friday or the Monday packet, whatever we're going to be getting, and that.
And the little shrinkage.
And the shrinkage of
the.
Mr. Arnold, that is also on this one that you just provided to us. You know how you gave us the other one, like with columns, like it's going to go bid it out. It's going to. Can you do that with this too? To where we can look at it and see.
Yes.
I'll
be able to do that.
The timelines.
Yeah.
Board, do you? Tony is putting together everything, the regulation, to where we're not having to do a Monday packet. Is it okay to give you that on Tuesday, or do you need it on Monday?
Does he have it ready? I mean,
no,
is it going to be a long time for you to prepare?
It's a print, so it's like a blueprint. It's probably.
I haven't seen it.
You just take it to the graphic store and they show.
Although you didn't want to see. Wait a minute. You wanted to see the project list.
No, they want to see the half size drawing of the
project. And the second project list.
All right, we'll get it out.
Parking lot improvements, right?
Yes.
And it's kind of a misleading when it says parking lot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because
this
just
what
looks like
we're
doing work on the parking lot. No, it's really extensive. It's very detailed. It's going to look nice.
Okay.
It's going to be nice.
Well, and he knows what you were talking about.
Yeah,
but
was,
we don't. So that's why.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
why we want to visualize
don't.
It.
Yeah, I thought the board. All the board
because we're ignoring him and like,
okay.
Whatever.
I think I was the only one here on the board at that time.
You're an old man.
I'm getting there.
through the chair, in the proposed first half of the bond, there are three projects that I would like to discuss a little bit, and I've talked to a couple board members about this. The first one being the wetlands project. And on Tuesday night, Ernesto, we are going to, and Pablo, we are going to, the board is going to reconsider the entire effort regarding the wetlands, and I was hoping that we could have a bit of a discussion tonight in hopes that on Tuesday night we don't have to have a 30-minute conversation because the agenda is so long. And if we could address some of the concerns tonight as opposed to fully doing it on Tuesday. So Ernesto, the second one, maybe I should just follow three, is the re-roof on the Canutillo Middle School weight room, which we discussed at our last board meeting. That would be another one I'd like you to address at this time. And the last one is the riprap at Alvarete and Garcia.
Yes.
Thank you.
But you'll be receiving that. I'll start with the riprap here. It's a smaller one. You'll be receiving your packet is the scope for the actual design details of what we're expecting out there. So you'll have a kind of a small snapshot picture of what you're going to be seeing as when, once it's completed. And this was sent to three contractors, RC Concrete, the High Ridge General Contractor, High Ridge, and Mirador. And Pablo knows about this. Mirador's doing some other stuff for Pablo as far as asking for concrete. And Mirador mixed his numbers with one of Pablo's projects, and his number came in at like $5,000 for the whole thing. And I flagged it on him, and I told him, look, you're not looking at this like you're supposed to. And he recognized his mistake, and he said, I don't have enough time. And you'll see, what you'll see in here is that he decided to pull his number. He asked me, I don't have time to do it now. I didn't realize I had made a mistake. So the only two numbers that we did get were RC Concrete and High Ridge General Contractors. And they were for GES and AMS, improvements in GES and AMS. It turns out that RC Concrete was the responsive, the low bidder on GES, and High Ridge was the low bidder on AMS. But they all gave us numbers.
Okay. And there was a scope of work.
Yes, and you'll receive the scope of work. They're going to receive them.
Great, right. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So the scope of work is written. What I did is I went ahead, you'll see where I broke it down, you know, all the bidding, how it went. And then you'll notice on one side for Mirador, on the project decided, hey, I want to pull my numbers because his number came in so low. It was so low that I called him up and I said, hey, something's wrong here. You cannot, you know, just the concrete alone is going to cost you $5,000. So then he pulled out, and then you'll see, obviously you'll have copies of their numbers, okay, what they proposed. And along with this, you'll also see, you'll have the opportunity to see the details, and here's an example of, it's nothing pretty. This is the bonding area, and you'll see where I'm asking him, okay, I want concrete right here. I want around the spillways, concrete hot spillways, the existing ones, I want rock riprap so that we won't lose the spillways.
Which project are we on, real quick?
This is GES at the Pawnee areas.
Okay, and that's for engineering.
That's for
No. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's just concrete work.
And it's stuff that didn't take place when they built the school.
That's correct. And right now, in fact, when I was out there, one of our grounds guy was telling me that the slopes are eroding and around the spillway, the concrete spillway. And if we lose that spillway, it's going to cost us money to have to put it up again. So what I'm asking them to do is come in and put rock, almost like a rock wall around it so that we can save that spillway and not lose it. And then the other thing that we're doing is that originally they had gravel, not gravel, but a pretty tiny rock where you have the slope where we drive our tractors down there so we can clean up. Well, that's already gone. Because, you know, you get the winds and all that, and it's full of sand. And my concern on that is that getting the tractor trapped down there. Because before long, you know, it's going to erode, and the tractor's not going to have enough traction. So the recommendation is to come in and concrete that there, so that our tractor can go down and then work its way back up. About a year and a half ago, I remember when I went out there and there were weeds the full height of the fence that was out there. And that that drainage pond is about 6 feet deep. 6 feet deep, and then the fence is another 6 feet. You're talking about large weeds, and at that time we couldn't get our tractors in there. Well, we didn't have a tractor. We always borrow it from the county. We couldn't get the tractor, and we didn't want to take that tractor because it was borrowed. We didn't want to leave it down there and have to have somebody pull it out. So that's what this is about. Now, at AMS, we have that condition. I think originally there was a set of drawings that were put together by another firm. I think it was GA Architects. And it was for, I think you had stormwater problems there, and they, if you, you're familiar with AMS and how they have that volleyball pit, mm-hmm. Well, they turned it into a volleyball pit, but that's actually a ponding area, and that's where all the water runs. Mm-hmm. Well, because of costs, if I understand correctly, because of costs, they left a lot of areas unfinished. When I say unfinished, well, not completed, because there was not enough money. So now we're beginning to see a lot of erosion in those areas, and what I'm trying to do is, what we're doing here is we're rock paving the sloped areas and trying to get the water up. In one case, we have spillways from a football field where all that water is, instead of traveling out towards the ponding area, towards the bank, it's ending up at the gymnasium area. So what this is going to do is going to alleviate that problem. We're rerouting all the water through flumes back into the volleyball pit where it is the ponding area. And that percolates. You have good percolation there. That's what this project is.
Okay.
And then the second project that you'll see is the project number 9, and that's the re-roof on the weight room. It's this packet, and it also has the scope of work in there. In this project, we had three contractors bidding on it, High Ridge, Roof Care, and Garland. Okay, and they all gave us their numbers, and also what I included in here, which is not part of the bond, not part of the, early bird project, I also asked them to give me a price for Cody, the support services facility, which is the base, the second project list that you'll be getting. Since we're getting numbers from roofers right now, we may as well include that one so we can get a good price. And so you'll see that in here also.
And that's a Part A item as well?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. So that's what you'll be getting on that.
And then before we go to the wetlands, both of those projects we discussed last month, but now we're coming back on Tuesday with much more robust packets and yes. Even additional bids.
Right.
Okay.
That's the backup information.
That's the backup information.
And it's in your packet. All right, let's talk about the wetlands. And just to let you know, I did speak with Ron Gatlin this afternoon, and he also confirmed basically exactly what we're both saying, that the packets are appropriate, they're robust, the bids are there, everything totally online. He's very pleased too, so we should be really good.
Yeah, at the last meeting, I just didn't bring it with me, and I apologize for that. On the wetlands, at the last board meeting, although it was approved by the board, we decided to bring it back because there were some questions on it. We said, okay, we'll bring this back. And what we were,
I know.
And I think it's mostly clarification.
Just real quick on those three that you have, can you, those are the three ones. Can you just go over those three real quick? Just the name. One was a roof, the other one.
Oh, the roof. One was a roof. The other one was the rock riprap for GES, and then the third one was the wetlands.
And all three are under, because on our agenda item, Part A projects that we're reviewing, early bird and or Part A.
Right.
And early bird being Part A.
Right.
Okay. Board have any questions about those first two projects?
Now on the wetlands, I think it was more of a clarification.
Well, then we
want to
wait tomorrow.
Okay.
Is there action?
No, it's just recommendation.
Ms. Darman Darris, yes. If you ever need a tractor to do your mowing, their GES, we have a tractor you can just call. My husband's always happy to go get on it. He'd be happy to help you.
I even worry about borrowing it from the county.
Well, we
because,
are very close.
You know what happens when you borrow?
I know.
And then they break down, and
well,
then
you
you're
just
going
you,
like, oh my gosh.
Well, just fix it. We'll just fix it. We'll just
if there is an issue, we're
yes.
right there. It's a good
thank
neighbor
you.
Offer.
Thank you.
There she is.
There she is.
Okay. We're talking about the wetlands, Mrs. Cassidy, and this is the packet that you'll be receiving. And I think at last board meeting there were questions, there were concerns as to why I was recommending NSI. Mm-hmm. And I think I had pointed out that the reason, there were three reasons, one or two reasons. One was that they're the original designer of this. Two was that I personally felt that it was in the best interest of the district to hire an engineer to put together the scope of work project on this one. Now, I think the concern was that were they going to bid on this? No, they're strictly, the request was strictly for scope of work information. In other words, they're gonna put the bid package together.
Sort of.
And then, for us, and then we will put it out to bid.
But my understanding was that they were also going to oversee the project.
There was the option, you know, I was saying they sent us, what I was saying is that they sent us a summary of costs where it would be the construction and bidding documents, permitting, operations and maintenance manuals, construction administration, that's the part that you're talking about. And what I was asking administration is to give us the opportunity just to enter into agreement with them based on whatever directive the board wanted us to follow, and that is if the board said no, let's just do the scope of work, and that's what we would go with out of it. But originally I asked them for everything. Mm-hmm. Just in case the board felt like, hey, we want them to also get involved in some other areas.
I realize that you're saying they're the original designers of this project, but aren't they out of New Mexico?
Yes, they are.
So are they accredited by TECQ?
Well, my understanding, I don't know, Pablo knows a little more about that than I do, but my understanding is this, is engineers by themselves. They're not, all we're looking is for a specification. And as engineers, and that's all the type of work that they do, they're registered engineers in the state of Texas.
But essentially, are we adding a middleman? I mean, wouldn't it behoove the district and save us money to just get somebody who has the correct licensures or the correct certifications to do the project? What is exactly, you said it was upgrades, right? Isn't that what
we're
you
calling
said?
We're calling it repairs.
Okay, so under repairs, do you in fact need an engineer to come in and tell you, or could you just have somebody come out, assess it, turn it in, complete it, and then get somebody from TCQ to come evaluate it and say yay or nay, this was done correctly?
We could. It's like I told you last time, like I mentioned last time, it's we could go that route. It was my recommendation. I feel more comfortable to involve an engineer on this. I'm not very familiar with it. I don't feel comfortable with it. I know that I have to sign off on some things, and that's my biggest concern. Is I just want to make sure that whatever repairs are done to it that are needed, and whatever's been bid out, okay, whatever we get as a bid is exactly what we need. You follow?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
And that was just my recommendation.
I understand, but can you feel where I'm coming from, where if every executive director we had hired an engineer or whatever because they didn't feel comfortable, you realize the amount of dollars that would cost us? That's where I'm coming from. When we have executive directors in place, it shouldn't be their responsibility to take care of these things, and then somebody, I know this organization, TCQ, If they come in, how would they fault the district if you hired somebody to do the project? Isn't there a contract that's signed? Wouldn't you tell them, hey, they came to evaluate it, you did this wrong, you need to come back and fix it? How would you be held, or the district be held liable in that aspect?
Well, it's not that the district would be held liable. I think it's more like you all would turn to me and say, why didn't we do this? Why did this fall apart? Or why didn't this work? Or why isn't it working? And I'm seeing it from the point of view of what would be in the best interest. I'm not talking about, you know, I weighed out dollars. Yes, you're right. If I went straight to a contractor and told him, hey, can you come and fix it? And he fixed it, and can you do your repairs? And he did what he felt would bring the repairs. And TCQ came in and they approved it. I mean, and there was a problem. They would turn to him, definitely. But then the repairs have to happen. Then I'd have to come to the board and say, okay, we, you know, they made a mistake. They have to fix this repair at their cost, so it's going to delay this or something, just in case there's a delay or something. What I'm saying is that I'm not a wastewater engineer. So I couldn't, I'll be the first one to say, I couldn't put a scope of work for this together. I could attempt to stab at it, but it's like telling me, can you design, I want, you know, it's like telling me to design a structural beam somewhere.
So, okay, how do you know it needs repairs?
Well, Pablo can talk about that better than I can.
Well, good evening, Mr. Chair, or Dr. Murphy. I think I need to back up a little bit, because I'm getting a little confused on the questions that I might have the answers to. So, okay. The wetlands right now, when we got inspected by TCQ in March of 2010, we have parameters for that. Permit for that location. It's a 10-year permit. Our BOD was at 165 for a single grab. Our limit is 65. So TCEQ said, what is not working at your plant? I said, the trickling filter is not working, the recycling pump hasn't been working, the pumps have been removed. The ponds are not working. There isn't the ponds. They're not an actual pond. You're not going to have birds flying in there because it's not a pond. The way the system's supposed to work, the water's supposed to be underground, and it filters through. Then we pump it, and then we pump it into our leach lines. The problem is, there shouldn't be a BOD back there, because we're not discharging into fresh water source, like we are at CMS. But if TCEQ desires to put whatever they want, that's what we have to follow. Now, we did get Mr. Hermandatis hired NSI, put in new pumps, our trickling filter. We turned on the trickling filter, everything was working.
You just said that he hired him to put in new pumps?
We got the trickling filter running, which are the pumps that recycle to the trickling filter.
And they came and installed them?
Yes, they had a technician or an operator come in and do that.
So was that operator accredited? I mean, what?
Is he licensed to work here?
Exactly.
I can't answer that at this point. I do remember reading one of his emails, and it does have his license for New Jersey and New Mexico.
But not for Texas.
Not for Texas. I didn't see a license on it. But I cover the district. My license will cover the district. So we will not be at fault. They could get in trouble with TCEQ, but TCEQ is not going to come. The most important thing that I need to make
sure. In other words, what you're saying is because you're I'm a wastewater operator.
Licensed D, and both plants are category Ds.
So you could oversee somebody that's not licensed to do repairs?
Well, first of all, we wouldn't hire anybody that's not licensed. We would, when we go out for scope of work and for bid, because it's going to be over $50,000, I'm imagining, we're going to get an installer that has to be licensed and installer too, and a master plumber. They know their job. They have to do their job. Their responsibility, and they're liable for all the work that's done. I'm not going to call TCEQ and tell them, hey, I'm doing these repairs, because there's no need to. Now, if we do upgrades or we change anything the way it looks, well, we are going to change the way it looks because we're going to remove all that vegetation, but it's still under our last permit, and it's still under the blueprints of the original.
The existing design.
Yes. So we're just going to repair. That's a very key word, repair. They don't have to come on a spec. Once we say, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to upgrade, then they're going to say, well, we want blueprints, and they have to have a stamp. We can't do anything without them. So what we did, what I did, is I called TCQ and talked to our inspector, and he said, as long as you don't have your liner torn, which there, underneath the pump there's a liner, and we have two checks where we can check to see if there's water in those pipes, that means it's got to leak, which we don't have a leak. But it needs to be repaired. The reason why it needs to be repaired is because, remember, I've only been a wastewater operator for the district for about 2 years. Before that, they had contracted a wastewater. Before that, it was Mr. Conchas that was a full wastewater operator for three plants, not two, three. When they let go of Mr. Conchas for whatever, they contracted something. That contracted operator did not maintenance, did not take care of anything other than picking up the samples once a week. Period. End of story. The district paid that much to have him pick up the water. That's it. Nothing else. Okay. When I got on board, and I'll be honest with you, I was able to take care of our most important wastewater treatment plant right now is the one at CMS, because it discharges into fresh water. We can get into big trouble with that one, but we're fine. Everything looks good. It's running good. Once I got everything there up to par, then we moved over to the wetlands, and that's when I started finding out that the trickling filter wasn't working, the recycling pumps weren't there, they weren't there. And all the potting area, instead of having the rock, the gravel, everything inside the pond, it was sitting outside, so when somebody took it out, instead of leaving it where it sat. So now all that has to be replaced. So when we got inspected, he said, I want the trickling filter turned on. We had a violation because our BOD was 165. But if you prove to them in the next couple of samplings, they remove the violation, which we did. I think Dr. Murphy got that paperwork. All that's been taken care of. They were happy that the trickling filter turned on, everything was working. But I'm here to tell you that all these repairs that we're going to do, everything, the plant will work. But still, we have to understand that we're getting two water sources from the elementary to support services. If the kitchen doesn't do their part, if the custodians don't do their part, they'll kill our plant. Putting milk down the drain, that will kill our plant. That will get our BOD up plant. So the plant will work and function because it's made to, but it's a septic tank with two ponds and then leach lines. That's all it is. So there's no control. We don't use any chemicals like we do at the other plant. We use chlorine. So there's nothing that we can do, that I can do, to help the BOD or anything like that, other than the trickling filter. We are putting bacteria right now because in the past 4 or 5 years, the two septic tanks were not clean or empty. So that's going to be part of our scope of work. Whoever we hire is going to have to clean out both of the tanks. And that will be expensive because it's going to be considered hazardous waste.
If I might, real quick, I guess what I'm trying to see, or what I'm thinking is, okay, I understand getting the engineer where they're held liable. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And we're trying to have them do the scope of the work, sort of what we're going to have Garland do. But now, for the scope of the work, my question is, and I think this is what is where we're looking at, can we save money by actually getting the stuff that needs to be addressed with having somebody that is fully capable to do it, is licensed and bonded, so that way if anything happens, then the district could sue or TQ or what's...
I don't think the district will need to sue.
No, I know, but in other words, but that's what the bond is for. They have to be licensed and bonded, so something like that. So is that correct? The question is, can we actually get that scope of work done, save the district money without having to get an engineer done? Is it Mr. Hernandez?
Well, can I say something before? As I see this, I don't think this is going to be the cost for the scope of work, I'm not too sure. Because all we're going to ask those people at NSI is to give us the wording where we give to Ron to put it out for bid so they can use we're going to use their scope of what they've done in other camps. They're going to come to me, and I'm going to say, this is what I want, this is what need, this is what we want, this is what our inspector said needs to be done. We're going to do that. He's going to put it on a scope of work, and we're going to turn it over to, after it's approved by Mr. Armendariz, it's going to go over to Ron Gallen, and then we can put it out for bid. I think that's what we're getting confused. The scope of work needs to be done so that we can hire the person to do the job. But we're not, that I'm aware, we're not going to hire them.
That's specialized.
Right. That's kind of our job. That's my job and Mr. Armendariz's job and the installer who's going to install the system. And then after that, the system should run better. We have a 5-year permit left still on that one. It's a 10-year, but it's halfway through. And if everything runs right in the campuses and the and support services, our readings should be coming in. And I've been trying to look for old readings to see back in the day how they ran. The farthest I could go is 2004, and they had a 62.5. And that's a pretty high reading. So like I said, it depends. And I don't know what happened at that time. I don't know if everything was working.
I don't understand all the details because I'm not a wastewater treatment plant. But what I'm trying to get at is, can we actually get the scope of the work and have somebody that is licensed and bonded to do that, to actually do that work without having to go get another layer?
So you're saying this,
Mr. Can do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I think to answer your question, from what I know and as far as I know, what you're asking is, when we get the contractor that's actually going to bid on this thing to do that work, go in there and do that work, we can. Can we get him to also go and put the scope of work together? Yes, he can, but I'd have to pick him first. You see, and how, you know what I mean? We have to go out and select a contractor so that he can do, in other words, I don't recommend, yes you can, to answer your question, I don't recommend it is because he's actually designing it and then he's building it, and yes, he's taking, assuming responsibility, as Pablo and I discussed. We discussed this at length about should we do this or should we not do this, and my...
What's the administration's recommendation?
My recommendation is that I'd rather get a professional involved. This is serious stuff.
And that's both of y'all's recommendation on that?
I'm a wastewater operator. I operate your both of your sewer plants. My recommendation is I have to protect the district, bottom line. So I don't know. My recommendation is just we need to get it fixed before we get in trouble. I don't know if we need to hire an engineer. I don't know if we can go to a company that to just help us out. I don't know. I don't know what my recommendation. I can't give you my recommendation. I just operate both of you.
And I guess the next question, the TCQ.
We try not to involve them. If you call the TA auditors and say, I have a question.
That's a very good question that he brought up. That's a very good question. You know, this has happened many times.
It's like the air quality. What is
right.
It?
No, right.
The name of the game is that we're repairing.
We're repairing.
We also, as long as the board understands that we run, if you were to tell us, and of course the board is the last word, you're dead, you know what, go to a contract, let him do everything. Then I would say, okay, at your directive, I'll do that. They start doing the work. Somebody in the community decides to call TCQ. Hey, they're out there doing something like this. Then all of a sudden we involve TCQ. I don't know what they're going to ask for. I don't know what they're going to do.
I was just going to ask. Typically, whenever these kind of repairs, keep saying repairs, are done to this kind of system, do you have to submit paperwork to TCQ so they can come out and evaluate and say, yeah, this was done right, or no? You just do the repairs and hope for the best.
No, what I did when all this was happening is I called our vendor, who is where we buy all our pumps, JCH, which is James Cooks and Housing, and we've been doing business since for me. And I asked them, what is it, what can we do? So what they did is so that the district wouldn't call, they called and said, hey, well, how can we get it so that we don't have to go under permit? And of course, when the inspector looked at it, he called me, he knew it was me. And he said, Bob, all you have to do is you cannot upgrade, you cannot change, you cannot design, you can't do anything that needs a stamp from TCEQ. And you go build a plan. You don't hire an architect and say, okay, here, no. That architect has to come to TCEQ, and TCEQ will work with them with the plans. They're going to tell them how it's going to be built, period, end of story. What we're trying to do is walk right underneath that line, which we're safe, because I talked to Mr. David Will, and he said, as long as you don't upgrade or design, or, then you have to submit the permit. We're not going
to
submit
the
permit.
So we don't have to do any of that?
We don't have to submit the permit.
Okay, so then how can you tell me that hiring an engineer to give you a scope of work and then hiring somebody to do it, how can you verify they're still doing it right? Like, to avoid what Mr. Armand, that is his fear, is he's saying he can't come up with this scope of work, he can't do it, he's not comfortable. How can you tell me that somebody's going to give you a scope of work, you're going to hire somebody to do it, if there's nobody that's going to come inspect or somebody of a higher authority, how do you know?
Well, if everything goes well and we hire a company that's an installer and is licensed, master licensed plumber, they know their job. I will be there to do an inspection, because when it comes down to the wastewater, that's my responsibility. So I have to be there at all day and check it, make sure that everything's going to get done according to what we requested.
I understand all that. My question is still pointed again to the engineering company, the middleman. If you're telling me that the people, you can get somebody to do it, that's an installer too, and what did you say, a master plumber? What do you need the engineer for? That's the key word right there. If this person has the correct licensure and they can come in and they can take care of it, why are we going to go an extra step further that's going to cost a large amount of money just? Or that's my big issue with this.
I can only answer from what I heard from Mr. Menendez, is that he wants to make sure everything gets done. Right. That you want to make sure ensure that the district is not held liable for anything that comes.
It falls back on this. I understand your question. And I understand what your question is. And I hope that you understand where I'm coming from. I, like Pablo, he has a responsibility to the district that the wastewater, I mean, that the wetlands are operated. He comes and tells me, hey, we could become a problem down the road tomorrow. In fact, as we sit here, because some things do not work here. We get told by a contractor, we can do this by doing certain things. Pablo's concern is that we already have a permit. Let's not mess around with things. All we need is to put a scope of work saying, repair this. This way, this way, this way. We need these things done, okay? And all I'm saying is that Pablo says, I'm fixing this. I'm running this thing. I'm making sure, but I don't want to stick my neck out to try to put some scope of work, what we call scope of work, out, and maybe leave something out of it. Okay. Now, the contractor could come in and say, well, okay, you need to add this. How do I know that I'm not adding more than what I need to add? That's the point I'm saying. How do I know that I'm getting a fair shake from this agreement? You understand what I'm saying? I feel more comfortable, and I tell you, I feel more comfortable when it's an architectural item, because I know architecture, you see? Mm-hmm. And I can put that scope of work together, you see? And I can, just like Pablo, he's going to be monitoring the construction out there, or the repairs, let's call it.
The repairs,
he's going to be monitoring that. Well, I monitor the construction because I feel comfortable in my area. Mm-hmm. And I can go up there. Now, to be honest with you, just because I'm out there and we have a structural failure doesn't mean that I didn't do my job. Mm-hmm. Something happened in the design, something, you know. But at least I can point the finger at that engineer and say, hey, you fix it. You're liable, da da da. In this case, we have the finger to point at the contractor, but then I'm concerned about you turning to me and saying, why didn't we just deal with the contractor? Why didn't, you know, after that? Now it's, now we have that opportunity for discussion. You see, if I had come to you with just a general contractor, it could be a flip to that, and you could say, well, how do you know? Why are you trusting this? It'd be the same question. It's a double-edged sword. You see what I'm saying? One way I lose, the other way I lose too. It's hard enough, you know. I wish I knew wastewater engineering. I don't. I didn't go study that, you know. So it makes me nervous because I was hired by this district to make sure that things are done as correctly as they can be done. And my experience has been that you bring a professional in, that, especially one that's already working, especially one, and that's, this is not, this is what Pablo is saying, is that this is not the scope of work. What I added in here for you all to see is, when I brought them in, I told them, give me an assessment of this condition. Tell me what is wrong out there. Okay, Pablo already knows, he knows what, that he's not getting the correct readings that he should be getting. But then I asked the engineer a year ago, tell me exactly what my problems are. And that's what you're going to be getting in here. When you get this, you're going to read this and you're going to see what he was saying and, you know, what the problems are and all this other stuff. And after you read this, you know, I'm saying, well, okay, we seem to have some serious problems out there. We just brought up that somebody took the gravel out. Somebody did a lot of things. And I'm saying, from a person that knows nothing, you know, I'm saying, what else could be wrong out there? You know, and that's kind of scary for me. And I want to do the best job I can for the district. So that's why this recommendation is essential.
Mr. Altman, let us real quick. Were you done, or can I, Ms. Searles?
I have two questions. I guess what I'm hearing is Monica's thinking, let's call it state agency and let them come overlord and make sure everything was done right, and they're going to do it for free. Is that instead of having an engineer that we would pay?
Well, I don't know. That's why I'm asking these questions, because I mean, all it's confusing to me. And granted, I'm none of these things either. But I'm just trying to do my due diligence as a trustee to not do frivolous expenditures if they don't need to be there. That's all I'm trying to get.
And I'm seeing it that way too, exactly that way. I'm not seeing it that you're giving me a hard time. I'm seeing that you're trying to get the best. You're trying to approach and get the best deal. Exactly. I don't see it that way. But on my end, this is what I'm saying, and I'm trying to do the best thing for you. And I feel more comfortable if I had somebody in between. In this situation, not in all situations, because I didn't do it in these, because I feel comfortable about this. You see what I'm saying? But in this situation, where I know very little about repairs and things like that, that is my recommendation. I'd like to have that person in there. I'd like to have another guy holding my hand as we go through this. Okay. You see what I'm saying? And that's where I'm coming from. Now, what Ms. Searle said about bringing a state agency, no, Pablo doesn't want to bring in the state agency to the picture.
I don't think the district wants to bring the state agency.
No, that's not what we
the state agency is going to come.
Oh, no.
No matter what.
On the board when we put that thing in. It was like somebody had pulled all of our teeth out and stuck us in the eye with pencils. You don't ever want them. This is what I was going to take, Monica. We don't want them, please.
But they're going to show up. They're going to show up. They're going to show up because once a year we get inspected.
Well,
okay, and
that's what I was going to ask you. You get inspected once a year, regardless.
Once a year, whenever they want.
They will then come and
check out. And all they do is they come and pull a sample.
And what are we looking at to hire, the cost to hire an engineer?
They have a $6,000 figure for doing the schematic.
The other figure you gave us, that was if they were going to oversee the project.
What I was saying is that if we could enter to them, and then I was going to sit down with, Pablo was going to sit down with them, and then we would say, you know what, all we want you to do is follow my instructions. And I had Pablo call them. He says, follow my instructions as to what I want you to do. I can take care of the, Papa would say, I can take care of the reviews and all that. So we don't want this, we don't want this. There are some things in here that when you put us, if I may, when you put a scope of work together, you can put it in writing. You know, it's type of specification. Sometimes it's a little more than in writing, and he has to protect himself. He says, I want to show a schematic of what it is. See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that you, contractor, don't come back to me and tell me, well, I didn't know this is what you meant. So you do the little, the written, and then you do the little picture.
Just real quick, we're going to do a $6,000 scope of the work.
No, not $6,000. I haven't finished it.
Okay.
The schematic would be $6,000, according to here, and then the construction and bidding documents would be $14,000. Now, all I'm saying is to give us permission to negotiate with them on these numbers. When we sit down with them and they tell us this is what we can do, then we're going to turn around and say, no, we don't want you to do this part, we don't want you to do this part. And we probably would end up, we talked about that, we probably would end up just telling them, no, we just want you to do this, do it, and give us something, a small
score. So,
and the amount would probably be less than that amount, but it would not exceed, would never reach that larger number that was in here, never. Because Bob and I have already talked about this, and we had said, I did my due diligence, and I said, give me as much information as this, because I want you to have as much information as you want. But it doesn't mean that I'm recommending we want to do all this.
So what are you recommending?
I'm recommending the right now to allow us to work with them to negotiate for the schematic design and the construction and bidding documents. That's all.
And what was that? What's
and
that
was $6,000. He's saying right now, according to this, it's $6,000 for the schematic design, and $14,000 for the construction and bidding documents. Now, that's a total of $20,000. Okay. Now, that's I'm asking it not to exceed, so that we can sit down and negotiate. Because when we sit down and they really understand what we want,
so it's not going to exceed $20,000.
No, because it won't. And in fact, I expect it to be less than $20,000. Because when he finally sits down with Pablo to talk about it, Pablo says, no, all we want is this, dot. Then they're going to look at it and they're going to say, oh, okay, well, if that's all you want, it's going to be this much.
See, now you're confusing me again because you just said schematic design. But you just said if we do anything to the design, we have to get TCQ.
Yeah, but these
now you're freaking me out.
I know. No, no, these are engineering terminologies. Engineering terminology means, and that's why I showed you this picture.
That's the scope of the work. What we're looking at is doing.
Okay. It's the scope of the work. And sometimes the scope of the work, what they call the scope of the work, let's say, for example, me. If you say, give me a scope of the work. Okay, I'll give you a little detailed drawing. That's schematic design. They call it schematic design. But that's the word that they use. Okay. They're not designing.
No redesign.
No redesign. They would have said it wouldn't have said schematic design. It would have said redesign.
Let me go real quick with Letty. I think she had a question.
I just have a comment and a question. What if the, and I know this didn't happen in this situation, what if that company had gone out of business? You would have never been able to contact them.
Oh, the inside people?
Yes. Uh-huh. The what if, but it didn't happen. My second question is, did you have other bids from other?
Well, we haven't, we're not, did I entertain other people?
Mm-hmm.
There was, no, I didn't. In fact, when we experienced the problem, I'll tell you why this came about. And this is just the process that we're through. When we experienced the problem, I was trying to find out who out there could support and help us. Robert Kistner is one of them that could help us. Maybe even more local. Moreno Cardenas could do this. Okay, those I do know that are the people. So when I wanted to find out more information, I went to the old steps that we had. Looking through things. That's when I stumbled upon the specs, and it said NSI, and I said, well, I need more information. When I called them up, I found out, yeah, it still exists. They're still out there. So,
Didn't we have another engineer that was doing some of the work? Was it in between, or that also knows the district?
That's James Cooks and Hobson. His name is Mark Snyder. He's the one that his name is throughout the whole work of.
Wasn't there another individual that was, or was that just the break between you and Concha?
Oh, that was another operator. His name was Jesus Ortiz, and then we also hired Edward Akis, but there were just operators that were there.
And wasn't there some engineers or something that also did some stuff?
Oh, those, Frank Spencer, but they were helping us with the permit for the wastewater treatment plant at CMS.
Wasn't there some? I thought there was.
There was nobody else that came out to McGavin and.
Was it?
I called James Goodson Hobson, and of course they called Aquatech, and Aquatech came out and checked out the system and looked at it and saw everything. At that time, we hadn't contacted NSI. NSI came later when we found the blueprints. What I want to make clear before I go any further is that we have blueprints for that. We found the blueprints for that wetlands area. We found the blueprints. So we don't need a design. We don't need a design because all we're bringing in is repairing it up to what it was set before. That's all we're doing. We cannot
change
anything. So
why wouldn't somebody be able to look at those blueprints and go and evaluate who has these licenses that you say and say, oh, this isn't functioning properly, this isn't working properly, we're going to repair this and that's it, end of story, without having somebody come in and do. Why are these people not qualified to look at those blueprints, at the design? Okay then.
Yes, this is where I'm coming from myself, okay? We all have had experiences with construction, okay? All right? And you know that in construction, you have blueprints that come out, right?
Right.
Then during the construction process, there are little things that are found that are not.
But that's why as-builts come in, right?
Yeah, exactly, as-builts. And what we're telling you is that the drawings we have are not as-builts, they're drawings. I can't tell you whether those were as-built, because usually when they're as-built, they're stamped as as-built.
Exactly.
Okay. The only drawing that we came across is just a drawing. Now, could
but
something
you can't
have
say
happened?
It's that's what's there.
That's right. Something could have happened during the process of construction that maybe somebody said, "Oh, you know what? Do this differently and all that." And usually, the same engineer, does the modifications and the changes in the drawings, and they stamp them as-built. From what I saw in those drawings that you had, Pablo, and you can answer this, I didn't see as-built anywhere. So then it goes back again to how do I know that what I'm going to give out is correct?
You answered my question.
Is that it? Anything else? No? Okay.
And we will revisit this on Tuesday for. Is any you need? You'll have all this in the packet as you go back from the background.
And what you, Casares, what you're getting here is it's not a scope of work. What you're getting in here is just a report from NSI. When I brought him in, that we were having problems with the pumps because they were the original ones. I actually brought him in. I think we spent like $2,000 for the stuff and all that. They went in, I told him, you know what? Give us something a little more current. What the heck is going on out there? Can you give us a little thing more than just a conversation with us? And they did. They gave us a report of what they see, which is an assessment. And that's what you'll see there. Okay, that's what you're going to see. And you'll get a better understanding as to what amount of repairs we're going to do. When Pablo says it's going to be more than $50,000, yeah. It's an extensive amount of repair. Yeah.
Pablo, did you want to say anything else?
When you look at this NSI, report, it's for both plants. But please note that everything at CMS is up to par. Everything's on automatic, everything's running. We have brand new pumps in our system. We have three brand new pumps. One we were able to save, and we were actually able to save the other one that we pulled out.
So we're okay at CMS?
Right now we're fine working at CMS, and we have one backup pump that we repaired. What we didn't repair, it was clogged. So that pump is been saved in our warehouse. But I do recommend that we buy replacement pumps for every lift station that we have in the district. And that would be in Garcia.
So you have those on hand?
No, yeah, we don't have them on hand. We have two in every hole. Two in every hole.
But you don't have backups, you're saying?
We don't have a backup. Okay. But that's our goal in our upgrade.
In fact, that's in the process right now. What Pablo's doing is getting proposals for that, and you'll probably get it in the future, because, and then when you do, you can, you know, be aware that that's what he brought up. They'll say, hey, I thought we fixed this. Yeah. It's totally different story.
Until
they
start talking about testing.
That's it? Mm-hmm. We're all good? Okay, so I guess that would take us to the next agenda item.
C'est la vie.
C'est la vie.
Agenda 3, community input, no community. Agenda 4 is agenda.
Thank you.
Okay.
Pablo, you can plenty of food back here, please.
Thank you, sir.
Ernesto, you as well. Everyone. There should be enough for everyone.
Oh, shut up.
Oh, I'm sorry.